for 11 years in a row. Ranking Arizona's number one most trusted referral network, RosieOnTheHouse.com.
Information that you can't get anywhere else.
And over three decades of Rosie on the House.
Bringing y'all back into my house here at Rosie on the House. Thank you for joining us here this Saturday morning. As any of you who are regular listeners of the show know, I'm a passionate historian and lover of this great state of Arizona. And Phoenix has recently, just now, celebrating its 150th anniversary. So we reached back to our contacts and found Mr. Steve Schumacher, who is a Phoenix historian and educator, to join us this morning and talk a little bit about the 150th anniversary of Phoenix. Steve, thank you for joining us.
Oh, gosh, my pleasure, Rosie. I just thoroughly enjoy the show, and the opportunity to be on and talk about one of my own passions, Phoenix history, is just a delight. So thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So if we're marking this as the 150th, what day are we using to start that 150 years ago? What was the event?
Well, what happened, it was October 26th of 1870, and up until that point, there had been, Phoenix was growing as more, I can't say really a town or a city, it was just more of a community of farmers and miners and that kind of thing, and they got to the point where they realized there was a lot of benefit in forming a town, and so there was a couple attempts to do it. A few areas were surveyed, but it got to the point where they needed to make some decisions because there was actually three different locations were vying for the becoming the town site, and so there was a gathering of all the farmers in the area, as many as could attend, and they selected a committee of three men to figure out what would be the best location for the town site. And they came back a week later, which was October 26th, and they said, this is our best guess. This is what would be the best location for the town of Phoenix, which is what we know today as downtown Phoenix, really old downtown.
Do we know what the other two locations they were even considering?
Yeah, you know, we really do. It's interesting because, of course, being a historian, I go down those rabbit holes and dig into them. And so it's just an afterthought for me, these different things. But, yeah, the first location was out around about 36th Street in Washington, just north of the airport. Jack Swilling, who really, in most people's minds, started the first ditch, he had a big house there. He had a big property just north of there. There was a guy named Helling who had a huge flour mill. And so they really wanted the town to be there. And then there was a couple guys, a guy named McKinney and another guy named Carpenter, who had a saloon and a little general store over in the area of where St. Luke's Hospital is, and okay, they wanted it there. And then the committee came back and said, well, those locations are, those guys already own pretty much all that property. We want a fair shot at it. And so they came up with the location, which ended up being the town site, which was bounded by Van Buren on the north, Harrison on the south, which is really the railroad tracks now.
Yes, yeah.
And then 7th Avenue on the west and 7th Street on the east. And that's what won out. That's what got the vote.
And do we have an idea of what the general population of the area was at that time?
Well, for some of the initial meetings, there was really only about 50 farmers in the area. But by the time they got to 1870, people were coming from Wickenburg and Prescott and so forth to try to plant crops and make money and so forth. But there was in the neighborhood of probably about 200, maybe 250 farmers in the area that were involved in the initial voting and the official designation of the town site.
One of the most mind-bending historical facts I have of really the Salt Valley, the whole Valley of the Sun, is when I tour Pueblo Grande Museum.
Oh,
And they talk about the fact that at one time, this valley could have possibly, from Buckeye to Gold Canyon, supported about 250,000 Native Americans in small adobe settlements all along the river. I mean, that's with no modern transportation. That's with no public utilities. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty much the case that wherever you walk around the Salt River Valley, everywhere from probably the nuclear power plant way out west all the way to the Superstition Mountains and north and south, you're walking on pretty sacred Hohokam ground, really, pretty much everywhere you walk. And the first canals that were dug, they weren't dug just, originally. They were old Hohokam canals that had been put to use for those 200,000 to 250,000 Hohokam many years ago. So the Anglos who came in from Wickenburg, Jack Swilling, and those kinds of folks, they just picked up where the Hohokam left off.
So these farmers get together, these three committee men get together and decide, okay, we're going to stake out what will become the center of this new town. Did they call it Phoenix then? When did Phoenix get its name?
Oh, wow, really good question. You know, originally, and me as a historian, I like to envision some of these things. There is one story, I don't know if it's true or not, that several of the original pioneers, Jack Swilling, Daryl Dupa was a guy who was credited with giving Phoenix its name and so forth. They said that they were sitting around on some of the old Hohokam ruins. I like to think it was Pueblo Grande. That just creates my little vision for me. And they're sitting around drinking whiskey, trying to figure out a name. But they had Jack Swilling had been part of the Confederate Army, so he wanted Stonewall. They even threw out Pumpkinville, Millville. There was various names. And then as the story goes, either Jack Swilling or Daryl Dupa had an old little pocket dictionary of some kind. And they looked through there and they saw the name Phoenix, which was a bird rising from the ashes. And they thought, well, this is like a Hohokam settlement that is rising again from the ashes. And so they actually had put the name Phoenix Settlement on that original location I told you out about 36th Street and Van Buren. That was actually called the Phoenix Settlement. It was a post office. Jack Swilling was the first postmaster and so forth. So when the original town site was finally officially designated, they just took that original Phoenix name and laid it onto that town site.
So, Steve, being in real estate my whole life, the early settlers come in and they lay their claim, and then these three committee men say, well, you know, here's enough available property to stake out a downtown. Who gets first title to the first lot?
Yeah, that's another really good question. I don't know if it was drawn from a hat or whatever. As it turns out, the guy that bought the very first lot, which, if you know anything about downtown, the direction and so forth, it was on the, let's see, the southwest corner of First Street in Washington. That was the first lot that was sold. And it sold for about $103. And the guy who bought it was a judge from Prescott. His name was Judge Berry. And as it turned out, he had some political connections with President Grant and so forth to get all the approvals and so forth. So it turned out to be a pretty fortuitous event to have this Judge Berry from Prescott buy the first lot and then pave the way for the others to be sold after that.
Now, y'all just last Monday had a little formal celebration for the 150th anniversary. What did y'all have going on to celebrate that?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was just amazing. Again, some of these things that I come up with, these ideas or things I find in my research, when I see them come to fruition, it just is amazing. So it was about a year ago, I went and spoke to the Phoenix City Council and the mayor, and I said, in about a year, we've got a pretty special anniversary. And so interest was generated. There were some groups that were put together to work on a celebration, and it actually happened past Monday. And unfortunately, with the virus, we could only have about 50 people, but the mayor was there, city council members spoke. I gave a few words about my interest and how this came about from a historian perspective. And they had a big banner talking about the 150th anniversary. And it was just an incredible event. It only took about 30 minutes. And but I just was shaking my head a couple of times, just thinking, oh, my gosh, I finally got the attention of the decision makers in town to really celebrate a big piece of our history.
Well, you know, Phoenix has raised itself in prominence from that humble beginning atop the Hohokam ruins to being one of the largest cities in the country now. I mean, I got here in 66, and it was a nice town back then, you know.
Right.
I call it a big city now. But Phoenix in Arizona has been good to us. People apparently still love it. We're one of the fastest growing cities in the entire country. And thanks to you, Steve Schumacher, Phoenix historian and educator, for bringing us full circle to let us try and look back on where this rising bird has come from.
Oh, gosh, thank you so much, Rosie. This is just a personal passion for me. My main purpose in doing this is really to plant some seeds in the minds of our citizens and especially our young people. So when they get older and they become adults and become decision makers in the Valley, they will for sure value our history and heritage and act accordingly.
And it seems to me, in my personal experience of life, those that appreciate history have a better attitude of gratitude for where we currently are and are currently going. So for your efforts in continuing that, I want to thank you, Steve Schumacher, for joining us here at Rosie on the House.
Thank you so much, Rosie. I appreciate the opportunity.